Welcome to the Tap Room exclusive. We are still at Bottle House Brewery. I'm with Jason and Brian. We've now moved on to mead.
You want a little bit about how this kind of whole thing got started? Sure.
Jason was bartending for us on Sundays, and he was interested in mead, I guess. I don't even know how the hell you got interested in mead.
4 years of studying English literature will do that to you.
So Jason says, hey, Brian, you ever think about making mead? And
It's funny because my former podcasting partner, English Lit, and loves mead too.
What does he do? Does he use his degree?
No, he does this. He does podcasting. There's that.
The variety of places you will find English Lit majors now. I actually just paid off my student loans last week. I paid them off last week with money I made making mead. So I think that's at least somewhat fitting. The most writing I do now is the labels.
The
on
labels,
the side.
And they're very, very well done. I was just kind of mentioning how this whole mead got started, and Jason had, you know, kind of pulled me aside and said, "Hey, have you ever been interested in making mead?" And you know, we were selling mead at the time. A bunch of Redstone stuff, Vikings Blood.
When I came on the bar, you guys had a surprisingly good mead selection. I think, you know, 10 or 12 offerings just because you thought it was different.
Yeah, definitely.
And so I started learning about it so I could sell it. I made a relationship with some local guys like Brothers Drake and Crafted. Mm-hmm. And, just kind of became interested in mead. And then someone had asked me, "Do you guys ever think you're going to make your own?" Mm-hmm. I asked Brian. He said, "I'm not going to, but if you want to, go ahead." And so I got a book on how to make mead from the Cleveland Heights Public Library and made my first batch like the next week. And started with 5 gallon, five gallon carboys. We threw one on tap. Yep. People seemed to like it. And Brian's, almost every major expansion of anything that's happened in the bottle house is you give him a little bit and it just spirals out of control. So I think we sold a little one. He said, "Hey, so we have now our licensed winery. You're the mead maker. Here's your job. Go make some mead." And so I kind of scrounged up any spare tank I could and learned everything I could. Went from 5 gallon batches to 15 to 50s. Now we're doing about 100 and 150 gallon batches in stainless steel wine tanks and beer bright tanks that we're not using actually.
So Dean's show, the Tap Room Exclusive, is pretty much at its heart a beer show. So kind of talk to, for the audience that's listening out there, a little bit more about what mead is. It's basically a honey wine, right? It's the oldest fermented beverage in the world, correct?
That's the idea. And it's a really, really versatile drink. And you can kind of see that. The mead scene, at least in America, is kind of blown up. So when we started, there might have been 100. Now there's over 300 with a meadery opening every few days. So not quite the same volume of places as there is in the craft beer world, but it's really, really growing quite strongly. The base alcohol is made from honey. You can make lower alcohol meads in a very short amount of time. A lot of places are kind of focusing on that kind of thing, so you'll see things that are 6-7%. They're meant to emulate cider flavors or beer flavors and kind of capture that drinking audience. There's also stuff where we've kind of found ourselves is in the more kind of wine-like. So most of our alcohols are between 12-15%. Our meads are all aged at least 6 months, sometimes a year, year and a half, 2 years, and can kind of become reminiscent of things like sherries and ports and vermouths and these kind of fortified wines and things like that. What we're drinking right now is one of my favorites we personally do. It's called Forgotten Lore. It's kind of got this, you know, tawny red color. This is made with Montmorency cherries grown in New York. We get almost 95% of our honey from a beekeeper in Aurora. So I drive down to the farm once or twice a month, pick up as much honey as I can fit in the truck, come back here and use it and keep doing that. This is then aged in Tom's Foolery whiskey barrels for a whole year on whole vanilla bean. Mm-hmm. So what you get is a mead that's sweet, but the whiskey and the tannins from the oak help to kind of balance it out. I think it makes a really nice sipping beverage.
It does. You know, I think that the sweet component of the mead is, I think, something that has always, it's kind of been a curse in a way, because I think there's a lot of bad mead on the market historically, and I think a lot of people have come to mead, at least we've experienced, with a negative perception of what mead is, and it's probably because they've had some dusty bottle that was sitting on the bottom of some shelf for some some poorly made mead.
And it's tough too because, people who drink beer might not know that barley is the main ingredient in beer. And if they did, they wouldn't. They might not have the same associations. Where when you say honey, people think sweet.
Yes.
And they absolutely assume that what they're drinking is going to be very sweet. And this one happens to be on the sweeter side. But when I first started getting into it, I really wanted to challenge that expectation. So almost all of the meads we were making were incredibly dry.
Yes.
And it kind of took me a couple years of doing this. And unfortunately, the learning curve with mead is very slow because you make something and you're like, well, I hope that's good in a year. And then I'll be able to do it again for the following year. I think I've made 80 or 90 batches now. In the last 4 or 5 years, and learned quite a bit, but I'm still evolving my style my knowledge base, because there's no one really to tell you what to do with mead. If you want to learn how to brew beer, there's thousands of resources and courses and books and tutorials and people to ask. And if you want to make mead, you're kind of just got to do it. It is actually a great thing to do for brewers and homebrewers, because when I first started here and I was bartending, I was homebrewing a bit, I was making mead a little bit, doing a lot of these different things. And eventually, brewing, you got to sit in your kitchen for 8 hours. You can make a batch of mead in an hour at home. You got to wait a year, but it was nice to kind of sneak that in there. So.
I see a lot of people come in and ask me for mead now. Where's this resurgence for mead come from, do you think? What is it that makes people kind of... It seems like every day I get two or three people come in and do you carry any meads? Like, what from your experience, what do you credit that to?
For us personally, it's been kind of a slow burn here, whereas where you come in, you're curious, you try it, and then these people who didn't know what mead was 2 years ago are now, whether they are not, mead drinkers. They have their meads they like here. They come in, they order a glass of that. It's not like that's all they drink. They might get a beer, and then they get a mead, and they kind of go back and forth. A lot of places have credited Game of Thrones with being a massive... massive push for that. If you read fantasy literature, if you read Tolkien, they're drinking mead. And if they don't say the words mead, which they do, what they're describing is mead. Mm-hmm. So I think George R. R. Martin was clearly influenced by a lot of that. The world of fantasy and science fiction, mead's in there. And so I think the mainstream popularity of Game of Thrones has helped that. I mean, we don't see it here to the same extent, but I've had people come in on Sunday night, like, we need to buy mead for our Game of Thrones watch party. So I think if that's happening, to the small cross-section of people we serve in Cleveland Heights, it's definitely happening on a wider scale, and you're going to get people who are, all right, oh, they know Heinen's has a good beer and wine selection. They're going to go in and they're going to ask for it.
And it's also something different. I mean... it's a product that you don't necessarily attribute to your parents. You don't say, my parents drink. You don't associate it with your parents. You don't really, it's different than beer. So, and I think it's approachable to a broad audience. If you don't like beer and you don't like wine, I guess, mead can hit pretty much any kind of flavor profile you want. And it's...
It's incredibly versatile. It's also... it's gluten-free for the most part. So there's a big subset of the market. You can kind of, if you look at things that are popular in other food and drink, the locavore aspect, everyone wants to talk about the health benefits of eating local honey. Well, we're making alcohol out of 100% local honey. I'm not going to claim that it's going to help you with your allergies or something like that. But people who like to eat local, this is a way to drink really local. Mm-hmm. Now with Ohio maltsters, we can finally talk about the idea of making Ohio 100% Ohio, but this is a product that for years now has been as Great Lakes focused as I can be.
All right, so mead, I guess, has more similarities probably with wine than beer. Would you agree?
It's as far as the fermentation process goes, okay. Because there's not really a brewing that needs to happen. When you're making beer, you need to transform the enzymes in the barley and the grains. All the sugar is there in honey the same way it's there in apple juice or grape juice to turn into alcohol.
Right. So I guess mead also seems like an even more versatile beverage than wine, because most wines, I think you kind of think of, 12, 13, 14% for most wines, right?
Yes.
Mead, on the other hand, has a lot of different substyles. Is that correct?
Tons of substyles, and some of them you could say are rooted in history, but... mead, you know, yeah, people drank it 1,000 years ago and 500 years ago, but there wasn't a continuous mead-making tradition anywhere except really Poland and Ethiopia, maybe a part of one or two parts of Britain. And so it's not like, if you're a German brewer and you live in Bavaria and you're brewing this thing that is, you know, they've been making that beer the same way for 500 years. So if you deviate, you're suddenly doing this different thing. There's no mead authority out there saying, can't you put raspberries and cherries in this mead? You know, no go. So the versatility of honey sources, mm-hmm. you know, brewing with a buckwheat honey versus an orange blossom versus star thistle, totally different categories. There's a ton of ingredients, every fruit, every spice you can think of when you start about talk about using oak aging. And then there's also like a million hybrid styles. So making mead with barley to make braggots, making right. mead with apples to make cicer. There's a lot to do there, and there is a lot of freedom because there really isn't anyone telling you the right or wrong way to make mead. And there's no one, you know, there's no, like, actually, I don't lie, there might be like one or two guys a year who are like, this is not authentic to the, you know, the 1880s mead edict or something. But there's a lot of freedom there, more so than the wine world. I think winemakers struggle sometimes to, people have ideas what a, you know, what this Burgundy or this Napa Cab or these things are taste like. There's a really, really narrowly defined set. And so you can't mess with that too much, where mead, the freedom's just huge.
Yeah, and also from the ABV standpoint, you know, there's not really anything, like a session wine.
No.
You're not gonna walk into a bar and order a 5% wine. Whereas with mead, you know, you could have a 5%, 6%, 7% mead. You can also have a 15% mead, like a Melomel or a Hydromel or whatever.
Yeah. And we've had, you know, having that range on the tap is it's fun. And I think it's also can be frustrating for people who are trying to wrap their head around mead for the first
sure.
time. When like so right now we have three on tap here that are all wine strength. They just fall in the same world. So if you've never had mead before and you try those three, okay, I can get this. But if you come in and I hand you a 5% sparkling mead, a 12% wine-like thing, then some 18% barrel-aged thing, and I say these are all mead, it kind of like people have trouble wrapping their head around that a little bit. But that's fun as well because you'll
get
the people who say, I love this. This is great for me, you know?
Yeah, I think that's what is leading partially to the popularity is you can come in and have experiences that you've never had before when it comes to drinking mead. And you can say, you know, you start to... This is my mead. This is the one I like, and you come and show your friends that. I mean, we get all the time. I mean, groups that'll bring in a family member or groups of friends specifically. Oh, you've got to try this mead, and they'll have the whole
group
trying. One of
our most popular is called. It's actually the third recipe I ever had, and I've made it every year for almost 5 years now. It's called Blood Magic, and I think the name's kind of evocative. And it's blackberries, cherries, and serrano peppers, and so it's got a really nice blend of. Of sweetness and heat and pepper flavor without being overly spicy, and people go crazy for this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I had a guy last Christmas. He lives here. He's from Turkey. He bought a case of it and brought it to Turkey. She's like, I have to give my family this.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that in a way that's really exciting. How excited people get about this thing that to them is very new because it is new.
And you saw that with the craft beer in the early days of craft beer. I think that was, you know, there's a little brewery up the street. And you would take people there specifically to show them your favorite
your discovery.
Spot. Yeah, your discovery, exactly. So I think you get kind of an opportunity to relive that with mead.
The more mead you try, you kind of can find your own niche. So like anything in all the worlds, there's policy, there's practices you kind of can agree with and disagree with. And there's a lot of popular meaderies that are doing things that we don't necessarily do. Without casting too much aspersions, it's just we decided that going with our ethos, kind of the way we create, everything we create. So we use raw honey. We don't try and rush anything. So we're not trying to get meads that need 10 months to do what they're going to do to get where we think they're a high-quality product. We don't filter. We don't use sulfites. We don't use clarifying agents or stabilizers. And so it's as far as that, a very pure kind of product. And, you know, you'll see the clarity in this is very good. That's an unfiltered mead. It didn't look like that when it was 6 months old. It needed a year to get to that point. And so it's a very patient kind of game to make meads of this style.
It's gorgeous. I mean, it's a beautiful thing to even look at, let alone taste. I mean, it's phenomenal. So your meads, we talked about in the last segment with beer, you guys are creeping up on some people and you won some GABF awards. You've done the same in the mead world. So talk about some awards that you've won recently and the mead equivalent of the beer award that you picked up.
When you talk about mead, there's a guy who comes up, his name's Ken Schramm. He's kind of the godfather of the mead world the way Charlie Papazian was for homebrewing. So his book that he wrote about how to make mead is how guys like me learn how to make mead. I think he wrote it maybe 20 years ago at this point. And he was the president of the American Homebrewers Association, and he started this thing called the Mazer Cup. It's in Colorado every year, and it's the largest international mead competition. It's very competitive, and we won a silver medal for something called the Reaper this year. And so that's actually a really fun one because that is kind of the most collaborative mead we do because it's what's called a braggot. So it's a mead ale hybrid. Normally, when we're making mead, you're diluting the honey with water or fruit juice like that. So all of the honey, in this case, is diluted with wort. So we're brewing a beer that's meant to get this. That said, honey still makes up 80% of the fermentables, and it's about a 14% alcohol alcohol drink. And so, people ask what the base style is. It doesn't necessarily have a base style. It's got this dark brown color. It's got notes of like molasses. We age it on French oak, so there's like some vanilla characteristics, and it's a really unique drink.
It's got a lot of caramel malts in the bill, grain bill.
Caramel malts and Munichs, and it's just a very very heavy kind of unique thing. And that's another one that people like, is it a beer? Is it a mead? It's the closest thing you could say is it's almost some kind of like a honey barley wine meets a tawny port, but it's still not really. So anyway, we were really fortunate to win a medal for that. And then there's a large cider competition in Michigan called Glint Cap, and we entered a apple mead of ours in their specialty cider category, and that won a silver medal as well.
That's very cool. It's got to be really inspiring for you guys to get those kind of awards and have that kind of recognition for what you guys do.
It is, and it's yeah, it is. It's because we're in a little echo chamber here. We're all, oh, this is good, and it's nice to get some, I guess, professional opinions on the situation.
I'm the first to second guess the meads and look for issues. And I think when we're tasting things in the brew, we're so often looking for flaws or something that isn't quite right, and so it's hard to kind of be really objective. And so, you know, the fact that Brian and I think we're doing something good and that I can let my wife taste it and she says it's great isn't as great as that is, the medal is a bit more validating as far as, oh, okay, we're officially making good mead. That's great.
Rob, anything else that you wanted to add?
No, I think we've pretty much covered it all.
Awesome. Thank you guys for being here. We're going to go and tune in next week as we cover a new style from here at the Bottle House. Have a good night, everybody.